Friday. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in to Tom and Curly Show. Now on from 3 to 7. Thanks if you were listening to us from 9 to noon. Thank you for adjusting your life and being with us now.
Like we did.
If it meant you had to quit your job or, you know, put your kids up for adoption, we understand and thank you. We won't disappoint.
There are priorities, after all.
Come on now. You got to sacrifice a little bit. I mean, we throw a couple Cars for Kids commercials at you, and then we get you to hang on. Dive in. They are challenging some of those spots. You know what I mean, Tom?
No, John.
We are a team. When I...
Did you see
Saving Private Ryan?
When you yes, I did.
Okay, when you run onto the beach...
Yeah.
We're a team.
Yeah. Why do you always push me in front of the bullets?
I'm not. They're beside one another. Come on now. All right, here we go. You write to us at mynorthwest.com, but I mentioned that. You can also text at 98973. That is the State Roofing text line, as we now rush onto the beach and talk about middle schoolers and sex education. Real quick, round the horn, real fast. Who taught you about the birds and bees? Tom.
It's a combination of parents and school.
No, who taught you? Your parents? The school taught you?
Yeah, I mean, we had school.
You went to Catholic school. They didn't teach you anything.
Oh, my God. Are you kidding?
They taught you thinking about it is as bad as doing it.
That's still teaching.
Sean, birds and bees, who taught you?
I think just sort of friends in school. I don't remember my parents really sitting me down and having that talk.
Okay.
But we definitely put condoms on bananas in high school.
Oh, you did? Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Did you see less bananas in the cafeteria after that?
Fewer.
Yes.
Sorry.
Yes. And then natural experience, you know. So I wasn't knowledgeable about certain things, but you kind of figure it out as you go sometimes.
But you had your protected bananas.
I did, John.
Thank you. Jacob? Birds and bees.
A lot of parents were certainly very involved in trying to explain some stuff, but they did opt me out of eighth grade health because they were worried about, the public school, the quality of the health education.
Uh-huh. And did that hurt you in any way? Have you? Because I saw your girlfriend in here.
Yeah, you just met her yesterday.
Yes. Yeah. Does it seem everything okay?
Wow, that seems very personal. I think I'm doing all right.
Okay, fine. Tracy Taylor, birds and bees, mom and dad, or the school?
She's not in here.
Up there.
You know, I think she's learning about him right now.
Okay, fine. Well, anyway.
She ducked out early when she heard what the topic was.
In the state of Washington.
She opted out.
So 2019, they tabled it, basically. The bill had come back again, basically, kind of come up with, in the schools, does you have the one curriculum come down and it's mandated, then the districts don't get a choice, that was it, or do you let each district sort of decide, hey, this is what we'd like to teach the kids and this is what we would like to withhold from the kids, right?
Yeah, you have to. So there's mandated sex education, but I think the parameters of that could be dictated by individual districts.
Right. So what has happened is in certain school districts, in certain schools, the kids are in the classroom, and Dory is out for a bit with his knee being operated. So Todd Herman steps in, and he's been talking about this topic. And a mom sends some information in, and then another mom does, a couple of moms do. And then he ends up talking to two schoolgirls who felt uncomfortable when they were in the class in the sort of this new sex education curriculum. So he got a chance to chat with them on the air about what it was like.
It was like saying like how sex can get a girl excited, so it makes it easier to have sex. So it was just extremely hard because I'm guessing that went into boys' minds, and it was... I'm guessing that just kind of influenced them. It was extremely awkward, just first of all, having a male teacher telling me that for the first time. And there was a lot of extra detail that went into it, and it was just extremely embarrassing, especially sitting with a class of boys and girls. So,
yeah, that was middle school. I think when the kids were at Eastlake, I think they switched them up. I think they kept the girls out, put the girls in one room, put the boys in the other room. So anyway, so Todd talked to the kids about it, and then he wanted to talk with the state superintendent, Chris
Rechtel,
right, about it. And so then Chris said, yeah, I'll come on the air and talk to you, Todd.
We have English teachers, math teachers, PE teachers who make mistakes at times, and there will be folks who will make mistakes with this. But the framework really is about learning, is about protective factors. It's about understanding reproduction. It's an understanding the role of sexual health education, primarily to protect individuals from assault. And there will be a time where kids ask questions about it. And that's why a lot of what we've seen pushed around social media is never given to students. It's not appropriate for them. It's in teacher guides in case they get questions or in case parents want additional materials.
Okay, so what your Sounds superintendent good. Pushes back on, parents get this stuff and it's in the guide, and then they say, hey, look, this stuff that they're teaching in class. This is what he's saying. So it's not being taught in class, but it's in the guides.
If there are questions.
Right.
For instance, one of the students that Todd talked to complained about a question about getting HIV from toilet seats. Could you or not? Well, I can see that's a kind of question I can imagine somebody who doesn't know much would ask. And if it's asked in class and the teacher knows, I don't know that that's wrong to say.
Well,
something.
That falls into the health stuff, but there's other things involved.
Well, that's the only thing that's cited in the article.
Right, but there's other things involved where you get into pleasure parts and, you know, if I can't.
But I don't know
this,
that that's. Yeah, I don't know that that happened.
What happened?
Well, I mean, I'm basing everything on the article in MyNorthwest.com from the Dori Monson Show about what these girls were complaining about. Or at least, I don't even know if they were complaining. They were just talking about it, and they were extremely embarrassing. I remember those classes. It is embarrassing. I don't care if you're just with a bunch of guys. Those classes, by their very definition, are embarrassing.
Embarrassing for boys. If you have an all-boy class, I mean, they're talking about stuff, but they're all boys. But imagine throwing the girls into that class as well, right? Okay. So then Todd asked the superintendent.
What about taking the affirmative consent theory, Chris?
Which is basically kids are automatically opted in.
Yes.
The parent has to make the move to opt the kid out, just like Jacob's mom and dad did.
And saying, we're going to affirmatively have parents affirmatively consent that they want this. Just make it opt in. Can we agree on that?
I think it's a really interesting angle. I think it's a really smart contemplation, and I hope legislators are thinking about that. I hope they're reviewing that as a concept. I'm trying to internalize that right now in terms of science in particular, where we get definitely some complaints on whether or not we would have to ask, you know, sort of permission from parents to teach and have them opt in. And it doesn't seem like it makes a lot of sense, but I understand the sensitivity of this subject, so I know why you're raising the issue.
There you go. I think that's fine. And then send it home. Say, here's what we're going to be teaching. This is it. This, and this. Take a look at it. Are you okay with it? Sign yes, and your kid can go to the class. If not, the kid opts out.
Interestingly enough, though, the girls admitted that they could have opted out, but they didn't want to because they were afraid they'd get more grief for having opted out.
Right.
So if you have you change it to you have to opt in, if most people still opt in, there are going to – I mean, I think word will probably get around the way middle schools and high schools – gossip generates, you'll know who is and who isn't, who's in and who's out.
Yeah. But I guess it's the topics. Listen, if you're just trying to keep the kids safe with the idea of like, here's what you don't let anybody touch you here, here, and here, that's fine. But if you get into pleasure and you start talking about, we'll do this, this, and this to make to pleasure yourself, and you can use this, this, and this in order to do it instead of buying a vibrator, you get into that. It's like, why are we teaching that? Why are we teaching the pleasure aspect of it as opposed to just the health aspect of it? That's all.
But that, and we don't know that they're doing that.
That's in there. Whether or not they're teaching in class, I don't know, but it's in the curriculum, whether the parent or whether the teacher ends up talking about it. So, listen, it's right now, I think in Olympia they had gone back and forth. I don't know if they ended up.
We'll have to check in with Hannah to see if there are new rules.
It. The Trump administration sees no threat to the economy from monopolies. This is something that's been talked about for a while, something like Amazon. Should we break up Amazon? Should we break up some of the big tech? Should Apple be broken up? Amazon gets around the monopoly thing because Amazon's involved in so many things. If you have your finger, think of it like a pie. If you have your finger in like five different pies, then you're not just one thing. You're not just a telephone communication. You're not the railroad. You're not just oil. You're not this or that. You've got so many different things, you're not really in a monopoly position.
Unless your monopoly is owning every damn thing there is.
Eventually.
To purchase. Yes.
Eventually you'll come around.
But that's off on the horizon.
That's
somewhere.
3 years out at least.
The reason this is getting any attention is that there's this emerging line. I didn't even heard of this. Emerging line of economic research that found that large companies increasingly dominate certain industries like telecommunications and tech, and that stifles competition and hurts consumers. So that is like the culmination of the Obama administration in 2016 came out with all this new economic research. They say now Trump is arguing sort of the opposite. They've got together their their economists to try to argue the opposite. The end result of this discussion is, ironically, if Trump wins the day and it's determined that monopolies are okay, the monopolies hurt, ironically, the very people that Trump was advocating for in 2016, which is the workers. Because they say what happens with monopoly, if you have a monopoly, you don't create as much product. And then the battle is for marketing, for sales. And that, so who does that help? That helps the white collar marketing people, but it hurts the people that are on the production lines because they don't produce as much. Because you can, if you have a monopoly, you don't produce as many items for sale, in effect.
So, yeah, because through efficiency of the marketplace, you are producing the product at cheaper prices.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
Right. So then rather than the microwave oven, which used to be called the radar range, rather than it costing $2,300, it cost $23. So you have to, you can work for one day or work for 1 hour and afford a microwave oven, where back in 30 years ago, you'd need to work 3 weeks in order to get yourself a microwave oven.
Yeah. The problem is, though, that we don't need as many microwave ovens now. That's the danger.
Yes.
That, and so the individual microwave ovens will be more expensive, or you can sell it for a higher profit margin.
If you drive the other ones out, eventually.
Yes, that's
but the thing is, the other thing it has with monopolies is, as you begin to monopolize and you start to raise your price, what happens is the competition sitting on the sidelines goes, ooh, look at that. Yeah. So they can slip in there. Now, can they be as efficient as you? That's the other question.
Yeah.
But can they slide in there and start to take advantage of the fact that you have gotten to a point where you start to jack the price up, somebody else slips in underneath you?
Well, you know what would make that easier? Break up those big companies. That's the argument. If you made, you know, let's just take Apple. Just random. And you made them into four different companies, then it would be easier for the individual
others to come in there and try to go after them. Right, because what Amazon does is it loses money in one but makes money in another, right? So they kind of protect their flanks. If you're in Suffolk County and New York and you try to smoke in your home...
Dr. William Spencer is not only a physician, he is a Suffolk County legislator.
Preventing the public or innocent people who have made a choice not to smoke from being exposed to smoke, I will support that legislation.
Legislation that has Suffolk residents buzzing. Will the county be first in the state to ban smoking in the privacy of one's own apartment, condominium, or multifamily dwelling?
It's impossible to enforce.
If they want to smoke in their apartment, I think it's totally fine.
Secondhand smoke bothers me greatly.
More than 3,000 non-smokers in New York die each year from heart disease and lung cancer caused by secondhand smoke, studies show. And smoke can permeate through cracks in walls, plumbing, ventilation, and electrical lines.
I don't know if it affects you if you didn't know smoking.
And I don't think it's anyone's responsibility to tell me where you can and can't smoke.
I think you should have the discretion to...
What's that?
Too late.
Hold on, Thomas. 45 more seconds of people we don't know.
Obviously, smoke in your own property.
It's not going too far.
It's not going too far.
They really slam these sound on tapes. Man on the streets back to back, don't they?
Headed in that direction anyway.
Legislator Sam Gonzalez proposed the bill and says just 13% of Suffolk County residents smoke.
Already there's pushback. Too much Big Brother? Will there be fines, arrests? Will apartment dwellers be kicked out, all in the name of good health?
When I get the pushback from individuals that say, no, you can't stop me from...
He sounds like a
guy. How tall is this guy? What do you think? How tall is this guy?
I'd say 5'6".
Let's paint some pictures here. You go 5'6"?
5'6", 240.
240. Right. Glasses or no glasses?
Yeah, no glasses.
Hair or no hair?
Yeah, there's some hair.
A little hair. What's his wife's name?
Louise.
Louise.
Back from individuals that say, no, you can't stop me from smoking. I say... Why not?
Gonzalez says it will be complaint-driven.
That's Gonzalez. Look him up. See if we're close. Okay.
Fines up to $1,000 and even arrests.
So where will they...
No
legislator could get away with being 5'6 and 240 with a wife named Louise. I don't think so.
Really?
No. There would be designated areas.
Okay, designated areas where you can smoke and not smoke. The idea...
I love that accent.
They're going to go into people's houses?
Yeah.
Right.
Well, I think my guess is the ban would be effective if you could convince the rest of us, because most of us, if only 13% smoke, that 87% don't smoke, that if Charlie smokes and he has kids in the house, that's a detriment to those kids. It's an unfair imposition. And so because of that, maybe we should restrict it. You can always smoke in the closet or something.
So the guy's going to come in and protect the child from the father who smokes.
I mean, I'm wondering, first off, the reason that this is news, because it's the first one in the country.
Yeah.
And I think most people would go, what? You can't do that. You've got some kind of privacy. I'm trying to think, so where does the social value come in? Well, if he is in a family You know, and it might be the secondhand smoke, you know, hurts your kids. Maybe you could justify that.
Yeah, because then the child can't speak for itself, yeah, and the parent is taking advantage and somehow affecting the kid.
Of a minor or something.
Yeah.
But beyond that, I mean, this will be the first in the nation if it happens for a reason.
Because I think they did the same thing. You weren't allowed to smoke in your cars. That was the other part of it.
Oh, is that right?
So your kids in your car. I remember my mom, I'd put the windows down. Put the window back up. You were losing all my smoke.
She was hotboxing it?
What?
Yeah, because she paid a lot for those cigarettes.
Good story, John.
We didn't call it hotboxing back then.
Right.
Just mom being mom.
That's modern modern lingo.
Yeah, well, I'm going to know how to hotbox anybody. But did you find out what he looks like?
Yeah, well, I'd already seen. Well, so I can't.
Is Tom close?
I can't confirm the name of his wife.
Yeah.
But I also don't. He was seated during the interview, so I don't know how tall he was. Oh, yeah. He did have a decent amount of hair, I would say, that not a whole much of hair loss.
Yeah, you're off, Tom.
No, I said some hair. You were the one who gave him no hair.
Advanced hair, go there, get the FUE treatment. I see everybody as bald.
Yeah, that's right.
All right, fine. Tracy Taylor with a fine head of hair.
Thank you.
How's your husband? How's his hair doing?
His hair is great.
Thinning a little bit?
Not that I've noticed.
In the back, just some thinning, light, just a little bit. Receding hairline.
Go with it. It's for a commercial.
Advanced hair coming
out. Oh, got it. No, well, I can't help you on that, but when he does.
There you go. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Is this because she got out of the sex ed question?
Yes.
Got
a drill in?
Well, you don't know, Jacob. I was downstairs learning about him. I had no idea. I had no idea. I had clueless to it.
When the work's all done and sunset glow, pull out the fiddle and we're rossing up the boat. Kids are asleep, so I keep a catalog.
It's well known that he is a Jeep.
No, a truck guy.
Yeah, it's already well known that he's a truck guy. By the way,
it's been long and been established.
Yeah. Every time we hear that, Brock Jordan, Tom and I go, oh, really? When? What do you mean that's all? It's been well established that I'm a truck guy. It's like, maybe we missed that meeting. This is your intro.
Hello? Is he not there?
Is he not there? I give him enough crap. Maybe he hung up on us. The reason we want to talk to Brock Jordan.
That's
is,
right.
Is,
hey, listen. Hey, listen. Yeah,
whoa. Okay, there you go. Go ahead.
You're from Puyallup. You're a truck guy. Okay?
Okay. All right.
Now, I didn't know how to hit my unmute button off my phone, okay. But I know how to drive a truck. Okay?
It's long been established that you are a truck guy.
And not a phone guy.
Let's see, if you want to start.
How are we doing?
You're
good,
hey!
Stars doing, man? All right. Talk to you guys in the afternoon.
This is the king of the schmoozer right here, everybody. I'm warning you right now. Every time he says, hey, that's a great question.
Yeah. Right?
I'm going to Venmo Jacob $5. Okay? All right. Well, listen, we don't need any of that. Don't try to shampoo us. Brock Huard, if you want to make a team and you want to make a league legitimate, you get a guy like Brock Huard on the sidelines talking about the highlights. And that's exactly what the Dragons have. That's what the Dragons have done. You went to the first home game. What were you surprised by?
I was surprised by the level of noise. Yeah, no, I was surprised. That's not a good question. That's a simple question. I was most surprised that even in that stadium that seats 68,000, and I've been fortunate to be in there for the NFC Championship games against the Panthers in 2005, against the Niners in 13, the Packers the following year, where it was ape nuts crazy. I mean, it was deafening. So I've seen it at 10, at the absolute 10. And, you know, even with 30,000 people in there last Saturday, and they're expecting, I don't know, probably about 22 to 25 tomorrow, mm-hmm. That place still pegs, you know, even with that crowd at about an 8. I mean, it is still a tremendous atmosphere. And I was talking to a bunch of the players on those sidelines, and they were, you know, they were like, yeah, this feels big. I mean, mm-hmm. This just feels like an NFL stadium. It feels big. And I anticipated it, John, but when you actually experience it, it was pretty cool.
So listen, you are, it's long been established that you're a hell of a quarterback, Brock Huard.
Hold on. In fact, I got a highlight. Hang on, I got a highlight.
Okay.
Huard, three-step drop straight down the middle. He's got his man. Touchdown, Seahawks!
Okay, that's all I can find.
I've got a suggestion. I've watched both Dragons games, and I would like to suggest that they suit up a 40-something Brock Huard instead of Brandon Silvers. Our quarterback can't hit the side of a barn, it feels like.
Well, he struggled last game. There's no sugarcoating that. He was not very good. And I will say this, though, Tom. He did not practice last week, and a lot of these guys had not gotten hit in years. They didn't do any live hitting in training camp. You know, there's few numbers. There's only about 52 guys per team. And all these guys want to put on game tape so they can get back in the NFL. So it's not like they were live tackling, live scrimmaging, getting ready to go. So these dudes were flying around. He got banged up the first game. He threw better week number one. Yeah. He got hit pretty good, and he did not practice week two, and it showed. I expect him to be a whole bunch better tomorrow afternoon.
Okay, that's good.
Okay. Is it hard to do play-by-play when you don't know anybody out there on the field?
He's not doing play-by-play.
I mean, not play-by-play.
He's just a sideline reporter.
I know, but they still go to him.
Okay.
But the thing about – I'll say this about Brock Heward. Let me kiss his weird ass for 1 second here. He does his homework.
Yeah.
And you listen to Brock Heward. He has spent the time in the hotel, on the plane, reading, knowing. So when they go to him, he's got this Wikipedia bit of knowledge about every single player, knowing college and high school, all stats. He does the homework. So for this kind of thing, it's got to be much harder to just look across the field and go, oh, that's that guy. You don't know anything about him.
To a degree, John, I was actually flying with my wife today, and I told her that these games are much easier than college. And the NFL are much easier than these games because, as I said earlier, you only have about 52 guys on the roster, 45 of them suit up. In a college game, I'll have to know 90 guys, and those rosters turn over a lot. And here come high school kids that you know nothing about. I've got a big advantage doing these games. Because most of these guys are 23 to 30, and I've seen almost all of them in college over the last 10 years of calling college games. So I feel like I've got a little cheat code knowing that through the college game, and then the numbers for me are a lot less than my normal job in the fall. So I'm having fun, I have a blast calling these games.
So, listen, I'm wondering about, I think the most famous thing that any Seattle Dragon has ever done is be the first person to drop the F-bomb on live TV during the XFL. If you're a sideline reporter, do you live for those moments? Because it was a sideline reporter that elicited that response, or do you live in dread of them?
Tom, he's a Christian.
Oh, I know, but he's also a paid broadcaster.
But he's a Christian first.
That's why I'm asking the question.
Okay, all right.
Yes, I'm a Christian that happens to know that Fox has a five-second delay. So ESPN ABC did not. But we've got someone listening back in L.A. got a five-second delay. So we've got a little safety net in case those guys want to lose their mind a little bit.
There you go.
I will say this. Okay. I was not a part of that broadcast where the guy dropped Dylan Day was his name from Mississippi State, who dropped the F-bomb. But I was a part of the other broadcast where the guy, I asked him on the field, he had torn his ACL three times. He broke his back the year before. He's out there playing on three torn ACLs and a broken back. And I said to him, why are you still doing this? And he just point blank said, because I love this game, man. Because I love this game. And so those moments, Tom, those are the ones much more than F-bombs that I think you live for on those sidelines.
Very cool.
Stewart up and firing to the back of the end zone. Touchdown.
That's it. Okay, what if we asked...
One more to go. I think I had three.
No, that's it.
One more.
It has 232 views. You've got a big family there, Mpuel. Okay, one last question for you. We asked the guy from Tampa. We talked to the guy from the Tampa Vipers. And we said, what advice would you give McMahon and everybody else behind the scenes on something like this? How do you make this thing, this game, more than just like, oh yeah, the XFL? What is it that needs to be done in order to make this taken seriously?
Yeah, a couple of these guys got to make it in the NFL, just like Warner did in NFL Europe, just like Jake Delhomme did, just like John Kitna did. All those guys were out of football. You know, Damon Heward, he was out of football working for Paul Allen, and he went over and he played in Frankfurt, Germany. A guy by the name of Damon, they called him Damon the Demon Heward. He had a poster board, a huge billboard in Frankfurt, Germany, playing in NFL Europe.
Yeah.
And those guys made their mark. They got back into the league, and they became, in Kurt Warner's case, a Hall of Famer.
Yeah.
So eventually that's what this league will need, to develop that next player that makes it big and says, that's right. That guy developed in the XFL, and let's keep this thing going and thriving.
And my last question, could you, if you wanted to, make it in this league?
Oh, Tom.
No.
Really?
I could go out there for one series, Tom. I could go out there for half a practice, and I could throw it pretty good.
Uh-huh.
But when you're on field level, it reminds me, like, when these guys get hit, I kind of cringe over there. I'm like, how did I do that? You know, when you're doing it, you don't think about it. But now when you're watching those collisions, it's a lot more fun to watch than to be a part of them.
Last time Brock Huret hurt anybody was out in the parking lot here at Cairo when Russ Simber said, "How hard do you really throw the ball in the NFL?" And with that, they went out into the parking lot, and Brock made sure there were no cars in the background. Do you remember this moment, Brock?
Oh yeah. Nerve damage.
What was the play with 25Y banana or something like that? Poor Russ comes out of the studio, goes out in the back, and you unleash a bullet at him, and you end up causing nerve damage in his left arm.
Yeah.
Show off.
That was a proud moment. So we'll see you guys next week. Before the next game, we'll go out back. We'll play a little catch, play a little country music, and have fun.
When the work's all done. And
thanks, Brock.
Thanks, Brock. You're the best.
Love you, boys.
Love you, too. Don't forget Brock's podcast, Above and Beyond.
That's right.
He does a great job with that. Check him out on Above and Beyond. All right. Above and Beyond is Tracy Taylor. Thanks again to Brock Huret for being on. I had to call him on that. Hey, great question. Because if not, we would have been doing that the whole time. Plus, using our names.
Yeah. You'll see you, John.
Yeah.
See you,
Tom. That's good, Tom. Yeah. Good to have Brock.
He's a pro.
He is a pro. He knows what he's doing. Okay, this is this right up Tracy Taylor's alley. These commuters stretch their daily grind far beyond the 9 to 5. They take a look at the people that are coming into work, whether they're driving or in, whether they're on a subway or some way getting into work. And what they do is they find them doing work while they're on their way into work. And
yes.
Then this group from this .org says, hey, you're actually giving your employer, is it $1,500 additional work? Is that per month? Must be per month or something. Yeah. By you doing work when you're not actually at work and you're doing it on your phone.
That's right. That you only get paid 9 to 5, but you are responsible. You are working, in effect, by making yourself better at your job on all these downtimes. They profile this young woman who happens to live in the same place my daughters both live in, Bushwick, Brooklyn. And she says, here's how she gets to work. So everybody in Brooklyn takes the subway. She puts on an NPR news podcast, a lengthy one. As she's listening to that, she gets on board the L train. While she's listening to the podcast, she's scrolling on her phone 5 minutes apiece for newsletters about venture capital and marketing topics, because that's her job. Then when she has to transfer at Union Station down in Manhattan to take the N or Q town, she responds while she's waiting for the subway to a half dozen Slack messages and emails. Then she gets on the train because the uptown trains have more elbow room. They said she cracks a book, Fearless Leadership. While she's reading Fearless Leadership on her phone, she orders a coffee on her Starbucks app and uses the walk from the train to her office to call a friend or family member. This is all before she even gets into work.
Yeah.
She's done all this work, and they say, that's great. The people that do this feel so much better because they get a jump on work. And this article just points out, by doing that, you are just giving free work to your boss. But, in effect, most of us feel like, no, we want to do, better at our job, and so we do all this stuff.
She's probably not paid hourly, I would assume. If she's trying to catch ahead and trying to read ahead and see what's happening, she's not an hourly employee.
Yeah. Well, right. And by the way, we're talking about, they say it's a small minority, about 8% of people do work on the way to work.
Uh-huh.
Most of us kind of like zone out or meditate or these kinds of things, but that does happen. And it does, Jacob mentioned this, it sounds a lot like my commute, since I take the bus. Before I leave tonight, Jacob will print out the stories that are going to be, on tomorrow's show, so I can read those on the bus. So I'm getting stuff done on the bus. He sends it out in the morning, so when I, if there's been any changes, I can read them on the bus in. It's just a very practical way. And, I don't feel like, Cairo's ripping me off because I'm prepping for the show, because it makes for a better show, makes it more enjoyable to talk to you when we've read up everything.
Well, on public transportation, 1/3 listen to music. Right, 29% read books or magazines, and then the small minority, that's 8% that actually are getting as much done as they can possibly get done.
Yeah. So that's what they're arguing here. It's a new phenomenon, and it's a phenomenon that happens because we have smartphones.
Right. Plus, just generally, for someone like this, and then for you and me and other people that are involved in work outside of work, you do feel like I've got some free time, and this time is better spent being better prepared for work.
Yeah.
Most people will go home, and it's very hard. France passed a law a number of years ago saying after a certain time, I think it's 5 o'clock, you can receive no emails from work. Did you see that?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I think I heard that.
A clear distinction between work and home, and no one is allowed to invade that.
Yeah.
In the United States, you'd have a difficult time pushing that because people want to be able to have it, or there's just a series of, I've got to keep up with the guy in the other desk, so when my boss sends me something on a Sunday morning, of course I have to respond to it.
And especially in a job like ours, which is, admittedly is an odd job.
Yeah.
We have to keep up on all the news of the day, whether we're taking a vacation or not. We're still responsible for knowing what happened. And so it's a great way to kind of keep up.
Would you like the government to get in and legislate and say after 5 o'clock, you can opt in or opt out in order to have your boss send you emails?
I think that's unnecessary. I mean, I'm all for big government, as you know, John, but I think that's a necessary reach.
Wow, that's too far.
Yeah, I
all right,
think so.
We've established the too far. Tracy Taylor.